You're listening to the Packernet Podcast Network.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Packernet Podcast. I am your host and resident panelist, as always, Ryan Schlipp. Check us out online, packernet.com. Find me on Twitter, pack_data. So, as is, was, and will be the case for some time now, there's still not very much going on out there. We still have over 3 weeks before the Packers get back to work, so that means three more weeks of articles ranking things. And of course, everybody's favorite, 24 days until training camp. Here's 24 reasons why the Packers will win the Super Bowl, you know? That's about it, man. That's all that's out there right now. There also continues to be plenty of articles such as this. Packers named favorites to land former All-Pro pass catcher, which I'm sure you can imagine, is Julio Jones. And I feel like I've commented on this about 700 times. But again, this is just about it. People check these gambling websites. They look at odds, you know, the prop bets or whatever odds for where people are going to end up, and then they write articles about it. Now, is it mildly interesting? Because, you know, the bookies.com has their highest odds going to the Green Bay Packers. Yeah, it's interesting. But this has been the case since forever. For at least the last 3 years. As we've all been screaming about Packers need wide receiver, Packers need wide receiver, and by we, in a lot of cases, I mean everyone else in the universe, during that time, the Packers seem to always have the highest odds to add a wide receiver, because that's what everybody thinks the Packers need, that's what everybody thinks the Packers want, and so when people are putting together these bets, it's not based on anything other than that. Which it should be. It should be based on things like, what do the Packers generally do in these situations? Has this bet ever gone in the favor of Green Bay? Betting on Green Bay to get the high-dollar, big-name wide receiver. Is that a bet that's ever worth making? So, it's not impossible, but I just, you know. I think we're kind of to the point of the offseason where, you know, when you first get into it, stuff like this gets people excited. Like, oh, what if? At this point, because we've been through this 5,000 times and there's been 60 articles saying, dude, what if? Or Packers have the highest odds. Or there was a rumor. Somebody said something about something about something who had a dream. At this point now, when we see the articles or hear the rumors or whatever, I think most people roll their eyes. At least that's where I'm at this point. Like, please just make it stop. Please just stop. Like, if it happens, great, we'll talk about it. But I just... Highest odds, got it. Okay, great. Yep, gonna definitely sign him. Done deal. Lock it up. In other somewhat interesting NFL news, and again, we've been seeing a lot of this too, and I really just bring this up for perspective. It's not meant to be a ha-ha told you so. It's just to stem the tide of extreme reactions one way or another. Whether that be, dude, Christian Watson and Romeo Doubs are going to be so good, or, you know, Christian Watson isn't playing very much. What a bust, garbage pick, blah, 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 right? Steelers wide receiver George Pickens isn't going to be asked to do much as a rookie, according to a report. He goes on to say, this isn't a surprise given Deontay Johnson, Chase Claypool, and Pat Freiermuth are ahead of Pickens for targets. Pickens will likely start out as Pittsburgh's third receiver and could be featured similar to how the Steelers used Martavis Bryant in the red zone, who had 8 touchdowns in his first year. The second-round rookie was a full participant in OTAs after 2021 ACL surgery. Now look, George Pickens could still go on to be a complete star, a stud, all that stuff. I'm just pointing this out, and I've done this with several people so far. All the quarterbacks are basically like second, third string. Like it's a bad quarterback class in general, but there haven't been, aside from a couple articles of, oh, this guy looked really good, that's fine. But when the rubber meets the road and you start looking at, you know, where the teams are actually putting these guys on depth charts and things like that, a lot of them are starting at the bottom because they're rookies and they have to prove stuff. You know, so occasionally one or two will break out and become stars, and we see that, but that's not the norm. And so we shouldn't expect it for our guys, and we shouldn't be mad when our guys don't do it. This isn't based on George Pickens' off-the-field stuff. You know, if he didn't have all the off-the-field things or the injury things, he would have been an early. If he could have been the first wide receiver off the board, he's so talented. He's number four. Number three receiver, number four, number three wide receiver, number four receiver behind tight end Pat Freiermuth. I'd also seen something a few days back. I was going to talk about it, and then I just removed it because it was getting so old or whatever, but it was a similar report about a guy that, you know, I had consistently been looking at as, man, the Packers missed out on that guy. They were so close and all this stuff, and it was Devin Duvernay, a guy that the Packers presumably were interested in, and, you know, Ravens took him like one pick before the Packers, and it's like, oh, man, they missed on another wide receiver. They keep missing on all these guys. There was some kind of a report about Devin Duvernay just basically not really getting it done. Like, it's just not happening for him. Yeah, I found it. It says it's Devin Duvernay hopes to get a starting role. This is after they lost Hollywood Brown. This is after they lost Sammy Watkins to the Packers. So Duvernay is basically next in line, but just the fact that the article or the snippet here says that he's hoping to earn a starting role and has only had seven career starts on offense so far. You know, again, the point is, and I've said this 1,000 times, this is the norm. Guys get drafted, everybody's going to be great, everybody's going to be wonderful, and most of them aren't. And the problem with perspective is we go into the draft saying everybody's going to be great, and then we only watch as our guys don't meet expectations. We don't pay attention to everybody else having the same situation. So we keep the same mentality that everybody else is great, except our guys are not doing great. Because we're not keeping track of every single prospect that we thought was going to be good, we thought was this, we thought was that. Especially if, you know, week one they come out. You know, Duvernay's a great return guy. He went to the Pro Bowl as a returner. So that's another thing where it's like, oh man, you see him on the highlights and he gets a touchdown and kick return or whatever. Oh man, we could have got Duvernay, blah, blah, blah. The majority of the NFL draft is a barren wasteland. It's like panning for gold. You know, you're sifting through just dirt and rock and mud. Just trying to find that little chunk, that little flake. It's a slight exaggeration, but I'm sticking with that. In other news, Mark Murphy has confirmed his retirement plan for 2025, which is kind of sad. I'll never understand why Mark Murphy is so disliked among Packer fans. I don't really understand it. Not saying everyone, but there just seems to be a general dislike of the guy. I don't know. I know that we have him to thank for just about everything we're looking at right now. Everything about this team that we like is thanks to Mark Murphy. I mean, he's the guy at the top, from Titletown to, you know, the renovations, to bringing on Brian Gutekunst, to bringing in Matt LaFleur, the structure, that was him. We could have had Elliott Wolf and Josh McDaniels, who, you know, maybe both would have been fired at this point, you know, I don't know. It's kind of interesting to think, now that I'm sitting here thinking about it, though, what this team would look like. You know, who would our head coach have been? Who would our defensive coordinator have been? What would the coaching staff look like? Who would we have drafted? You know, what would our team look like? It's obviously the same players in the league. We would have just had different guys, different scheme potentially. Who knows? Different look forward, different approach to things. Maybe we didn't draft Jordan Love so we can avoid the whole, you know, potential rift, if there even would be one, or maybe there would still be one, I don't know. And then we could have had an earlier contract, a different contract, different conversations. Who knows? Maybe Devontae's still here, but also, you know, we maybe don't get Rashawn, we don't get Jair, we don't get Amos, we don't get Elton. I really wish I could just peek at that. I'll have to look into that. I don't know if there's any way to do something like that, but I'm curious. But anyways, I think Mark Murphy's done a good job, and I always fear change. A lot of people get very excited. They always assume change is for the better. I look at a team that's been 13-3, three straight years in a row, and realize that that is not normal. That is not what teams do almost ever. Actually, I just looked it up. I didn't even realize this. It has never happened in NFL history before. Ever. I'm sorry that I'm just stumbling into this. This should have been like its own segment. I just wanted to look it up to see how many times this has happened, what the longest streak has ever been, and the answer to the question is two. The only team that has ever done it three times and that's currently active is the Green Bay Packers. The Bills did it twice, Chicago, Denver, the Packers, Saints, Patriots done it twice, three times, Tennessee and San Francisco all have done it twice. So yeah, to say that it's not the norm is a bit of an understatement because it's, again, never been done before. And that's 13 plus, by the way. It doesn't have to be exactly 13. So it's another little interesting tidbit and another reason to, you know, we talk about Matt LaFleur now. I hate to get too far off of Mark Murphy because it's supposed to be about him, but you look at Matt LaFleur and you say most wins of any head coach in his first 3 years. I'm pretty sure it's the most wins of any coach in 3 years. That might not be true. That's a different question. Let me look at that. But he is the only coach ever, and it just happens to be his first 3 years, to go 13 and to win 13 games 3 years in a row. I don't know. I'll look into that. But so yeah, the Packers have been a little bit successful the last few years. No, they didn't win a Super Bowl, but still, first time in NFL history. So I guess we're back to where we've been 1,000 times and just trusting the process, trusting the way we did when Murphy had to select a GM, trusting when they had to go out and get a head coach, trusting when they had to get a defensive coordinator and then a second defensive coordinator. Sometimes it works out, sometimes it don't. Mike Pettine, maybe not the best. Our special teams coaches so far, it's been bad. But again, overall, the team has done well. But anyways, continuing on with this article, Mark Murphy has served the Packers president and CEO for 14 years. He'll remain in that position for three more years, but the team is already putting together a plan to find a successor. Murphy confirmed in a monthly Q&A that he will retire July 13th, 2025, when he turns 70. Team board members are put under emeritus status at 70 years old, requiring them to retire or resign, though they can continue to hold their title as an honor. The organization, this is a quote, the organization's executive committee has started to make plans for the process and timeline to find my successor, Murphy wrote. It has been an honor and privilege to serve as the Packers president. I plan on making the last 3 years as successful as possible with multiple Super Bowl championships. Murphy assumed the position in January 2008. The Packers won the Super Bowl in his third season, making him the first to win a Super Bowl as a player and as a team's chief executive. He was a defensive back on Washington's Super Bowl 17 championship team in 1982. So, I don't know. This is kind of hard to know how to feel about it. I'm sure the person that comes in will be fine. I'm sad for Mark, but I'm also happy for him. Made it to 70. He's got his emeritus status. Gets to kind of retire and kick back and all that stuff. But I think it's just kind of everything. You know, Mark Murphy's heading out. It's 2025, but it'll be here in a blink, you know. Aaron Rodgers is kind of winding down. I don't know. I hope it's a good year. Let's just say that. And then in other news, apparently Rico Gafford is being put back at cornerback, and I kind of knew exactly where this was headed. As soon as I saw the article here, I kind of knew why this was happening, and it makes sense. He went from wide receiver to corner. Why? Well, if you've tried to sit down and do a 53-man roster for the Green Bay Packers, it's very obvious why. If I told you that you were only allowed to keep six wide receivers, let's just say that was a goal, I think you would be upset with that rule. Because I'd be willing to bet most Packer fans want more than that, and that has nothing to do with Rico Gafford. Sammy Watkins, Alan Lazard, Randall Cobb, Amari Rodgers, Romeo Doubs, Christian Watson, Juwan Winfrey, Malik Taylor, Samori Toure, and Danny Davis. And Rico Gafford, right? 10 guys. I think the Packers are going to have a hard enough time deciding who to keep just based on keep, you know, in terms of put on the active roster. But I think they're going to have a hard enough time with just, I mean, the first nine that I listed. I mean, everybody except Danny Davis, which is why I look at Samori Toure and I'm thinking, you know, I'm sure the guy's got some talent and everything else, but we can just go ahead and probably assume he's going to be a practice squad guy. Unless he just completely blows up. But, I mean, there's still Malik Taylor and Juwan Winfrey. I don't think we can 100% rule them out. The Packers know that they can rely on them, count on them, etc., etc. There's a good chance they don't make the team just based on how many guys there are now. But it's hard to just cast them off as much as they've played over the years. Amari, I'm sure a lot of Packer fans would love to just cast him off and be like, "Ah, just dump him. He's worthless or whatever." But that's not going to happen. He's going to be on the team. He's going to play. He's probably going to get an increased role. Cobb, Lazard, Watkins. I mean, again, it's not impossible that they make a move and possibly let Sammy go. But there's also a pretty good chance that those three are basically locks. I mean, we know Lazard is. Quite confident Randall Cobb is. And so you're really just looking at Watson and Dobbs and saying, is there any chance that these are practice squad guys? I mean, probably not Watson, but maybe Dobbs, as much as everybody's really excited about him and his potential to be, you know, NFL ready and all that, maybe. But if we say no, then that's six right there. And Malik and Juwan are gone, and Ture is on the practice squad, and Danny Davis is, I don't know, maybe practice squad. The point is, though, you look at Rico Gafford. And the Packers looked at it, and obviously they've been kind of shuffling this and looking at this, and they wanted him to come in as a wide receiver, probably because we were very light at the position, and they like what he can do at that spot. But then you add Sammy Watkins, you add Romeo Dobbs, you add Christian Watson, you add Samori Toure, you add Danny Davis, and you're looking at it, and the bottom line is he has zero chance. Not 1%, not a half a percent, not 0.2%, not 0.01%, he has 0% chance of making it on the roster as a wide receiver. And you know, that may be true of Danny Davis, that may be almost true of Toure or some of these other guys as well, but the point is, Rico Gafford has the ability to play corner. Maybe they like him more as a wide receiver than a corner, but the point is, they want to give him some kind of a chance to do something. And if you look at corner, as much as we love our corners, you got Stokes, you got Rasul, you got Jair. Who's after that? Right? I mean, again, we can go to wide receiver, and I can tell you with 100% certainty that Rico Gafford is not going to make the roster. Aside from our top three, I cannot give you one cornerback that I am confident is 100% locked up. Shamar Jean-Charles, I don't know a single thing about the guy. I know we drafted him, I know some people were excited about him, and I know he didn't really get any opportunities, presumably because he just wasn't super great. Keyshawn Nixon as a potential slot guy, or maybe just a... I don't know. I again, don't know anything about Keyshawn Nixon in terms of his abilities, in terms of his... You know, I mean, if somebody goes... And that is a concern. I mean, if somebody goes down, who steps up? I don't have confidence in one person on this entire list of corners behind the guys that we have as the top three. So, kind of two things here. Number one, scary. But number two, the odds that Rico Gafford can come in and earn a spot as a backup corner, I mean, he could easily be next in line. And by easily, I mean, it's just a low bar to get over. No offense to these other guys, and I hope somebody can step up and fill that role and play really, really well. But, I mean, we talk about wide receiver and how they haven't invested and they haven't done enough and that da 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 da. You know, and I'm not going to say we haven't done enough at corner, because obviously we have. We went out and drafted Eric Stokes and Jair Alexander in the first round. And this is a team that constantly was taking swings at corner over and over and over, to the point of being, you know, making me nauseous. Like, just stop already. But it is kind of getting to the point where it's like, you know, wouldn't mind taking a swing in the third round or something. I mean, granted, that's a cursed round, but you get what I'm saying. A mid-round something, anything, I don't know. You know, we've looked at wide receivers like Julio 700,000 times, but, you know, I mentioned Justin Houston a couple days ago because it's nice to talk about another position, and everybody acknowledges the lack of depth at edge, but what about corner? I mean, it's kind of similar to Rashawn, where when he goes down, you kind of worry about our ability to rush the passer. If Jair goes down again, I'm a little worried about our ability to cover. Granted, I think Rasul just goes right back outside, which is great, so our top two guys are still fine, but, you know, we got to have somebody slide in there and be able to play at a slightly adequate level. That's largely true of safety as well. Whatever you think of Darnell Savage, you know, if one of these guys goes down, hopefully not Amos. But what do you got? Seventh round pick Vernon Scott, Sean Davis, Tariq Carpenter, who's, you know, like a basically a big linebacker, Innis Gaines, and Trey Sterling. I'm not trying to complain about the team or the roster. I mean, the starters are great, but it's just that the DBs are paper thin. I mean, the guys that we have starting, I'm obsessed with. But I think what we really need, and something that's not being talked about enough, is when training camp comes up, we got to be all eyes on these DBs. You know, somebody needs to separate themselves. And again, getting back to Rico Gafford, he's got a great opportunity at corner. And it's got to be frustrating. He spent a lot of time learning about the offense while everybody else has been studying the defensive playbook and all that. But, you know, he has a real shot at being something here. But that's something that we definitely have to keep an eye on. You know, again, Keyshawn Nixon, Rico Gafford, Kabion Ento, Shamar Jean Charles, Keandre Thomas, Raleigh Texada, Sean Davis, Vernon Scott, Tariq Carpenter, Innis Gaines, Trey Sterling. These guys, we need to see something, hear something. One of these guys, any one, just give me one. I think any team loses two corners, they're in dire straits. And I can't really expect, you know, that to be okay for anybody. But if you give me one decent backup, and there's a lot of guys there, give me one guy that can come in and just not be awful, not just be a sieve, then I'm content. But it's going to be largely a new thing for Rico, who does have some NFL experience, but it's all been special teams and at wide receiver. Which I suppose to some degree will work in his favor, the fact that he also has special teams experience. So you got a guy that could maybe be a decent corner. He's a smaller guy, 5'10", 184. I don't know if they're going to try to put him in the slot. That's what he mostly was as a wide receiver, so maybe he's going to be a slot corner. I don't know. But having special teams experience will also help. Might as well look at the other guys since we're talking about it. Keyshawn Nixon, 3 years as a Raider. I think my assumption is he was brought over largely for special teams. He comes over from the same team that our new special teams coordinator comes from, so he probably was asked to come over. However, as a defender, his first 2 years, he didn't play very much, but was quite bad at football. But a lot of real interesting characteristics. First of all, again, a lot of special teams experience. Not very good at it, but a lot of special teams experience, and he understands everything that he's going to need to know here on special teams because he played for the Raiders. So he understands what the expectations are. He understands how the assignments and all that stuff. So right there is a pretty good reason to expect him to make the team. If for no other reason, he'll be a special teamer. But beyond that, there's a few other interesting little tidbits about him. First of all, again, his first 2 years as a defender were quite bad. Really, really low grades, 30s, 40s, etc. But in 2021, again, very limited sample size, 77.4 overall grade. He had an 85.6 pass rush grade and a 75 coverage grade. Targeted four times, targeted five times, four of them were caught for 21 yards. And it's not just that he had really good games, because he did. He only played in five games, but he didn't have any bad games. That's another thing to keep in mind, because remember, 2019, 2020, he had really bad grades, and you only get bad grades when you have bad games. He didn't have any bad games. The other interesting thing is he came on at the end of the season. Maybe this was all just due to injuries and all that, but when you see a guy come in weeks 15, 16, 18, and then in the wild card, it's a good sign. Another interesting fact, he comes in week 15, he's coming in cold. That's the one game he played as a starter. Again, probably due to injuries and all that stuff. That's fine, though. You got a guy sitting on the bench, and they're saying, you're up, you're playing, you're going to be a slot cornerback, you're going to play as a starter, 34 snaps. That was the one game that he crushed it. 81.6 overall grade. Granted, next week when he played 32 snaps, almost the same amount of snaps, even though he wasn't technically a starter. But the two games he actually played a bunch, week 15 and 16, again, coming in cold, hasn't played since week 6, and that was only 13 snaps. 81 overall grade, then 72 overall grade. But the game he was a starter in week 15 against Cleveland, 81.6 overall grade, 63 run defense, 80.7 tackling grade, 85 pass rush grade. He had four attempts, got one pressure, including a hit on the quarterback, and a 76.8 coverage grade. So he had two games, weeks 15 and 16, where he played a bunch, and he had really high grades in those games. Another interesting tidbit about Keyshawn Nixon. In week 6, he played as the left cornerback. In week 15 and 16, he was the slot cornerback. In week 18, he was a strong safety. So there's a lot to like about Keyshawn Nixon. Obviously, there's issues. He's a 2019 undrafted free agent, 5'10", 193. I mean, he's probably never going to get to Jaire status. But you got a real versatile weapon who has experience on special teams, experience with our special teams coordinator, been in the league for several years, played in three seasons, 274 snaps over 3 years. Had his best year last year where he came on strong at the end of the season to help the Raiders get into the playoffs and, you know, not do well there. But did his best work when he was actually starting. Versatile weapon, slot, safety, boundary. So lots and lots of reasons to like Keyshawn Nixon. And I really think one of the biggest is that he can cover a lot of ground. If you need a safety to come in, Keyshawn Nixon can do it. If you need a boundary guy, Keyshawn Nixon can do it. If you need a slot guy, Keyshawn Nixon can do it. If you just need a gunner, Keyshawn Nixon can do it. In a pinch, if you need a return guy, Keyshawn Nixon can do it. He hasn't done that a ton, but he has done kick returns. Again, not very good, but 5 returns, 84 yards. His longest was 26 yards, 16.8 average. So, I mean, he just covers a ton of ground. If you look at KB Anento, the guy that's been kind of hanging on for a long time but just has never really broken out. He's shown flashes in preseason. Week 1 against Houston last year, he had an 82.4 overall grade. His overall grade for the entire preseason last year was a 70.2 with a 72.4 coverage grade. Unfortunately, the other two games he graded out poorly. It was just that 82 that carried him. Really, really poor tackling grade. And I think the biggest reason he ended up getting such a high grade is because he had a pick in that game. Now, granted, I don't know if one pick's going to carry him. He did play 56 snaps, so he must have had a pretty good game outside of that as well. But let's see what... I can't find it, but wasn't targeted all that often. There you go. 2 targets, 0 receptions, and a pick. There it is. So, you know, not a lot here. He does have some special teams experience. Again, that was entirely in the preseason. He graded out fine, 72.2 overall grade, which maybe is going to work in his favor. But maybe a little bit more of a long shot. Just because, I mean, the Packers like him because, again, he's been hanging on. But we've had a lot of guys that have been like that where, you know, they kind of flash in the preseason. The Packer fans, myself included, are like, dude, this give the guy a shot, man. Every time we see him, he looks great. But there's just something lacking. And it's probably the fact that, you know, some guys can go out, they're good enough athletes to beat up on third string, this, that, or the other. But at the end of the day, their comprehension of what is being asked of them is not quite there. And I mean, there could even be instances where you get a pick partially because you're standing in the wrong spot, you know? I mean, I'm just making this up entirely, but that would be an instance where we look at it and go, that was awesome, way to go, and he goes to the sideline and the coaches are like, look, congratulations, but what the heck were you doing? So the point is, they're looking at it through a different lens. It's how well do you understand what we're asking you to do? And we just really can't see that because we don't know what they were asked to do. We just want to see pass breakups, interceptions, tackles. But are you reading it properly? Are you standing in the right spot, starting in the right spot, running in the right direction? Is your drop correct? Are all these things what we've been teaching you to do over all these years? So it's kind of impossible. All I can really look at is he seems to do well in the preseason, but for some reason they just don't really want to elevate him beyond that. Shamar, right out of the gate, one of the, I guess, good things about him is He was a regular contributor on special teams and actually graded out fairly well. As far as Packers special teams go, 68 overall grade, I'll take it. He also had several really good games. Week 6 against Chicago, he had a 78. Week 15 against Baltimore, he had an 85 overall grade. So the fact that he was a fifth-round pick right out of the gate makes him probably elevates him a little higher than a lot of these other guys that are, you know, undrafted free agents and everything else. They went out of the way to draft the guy because they like something about him. As a defender, he did play a little bit. He had a 45 overall grade, which is obviously really, really terrible, but there were still glimpses of being a good football player. He had a 73 overall grade against Minnesota while playing in the slot. That was his second most amount of snaps. It was only 9, but it was still a second most. Unfortunately, the game in which he played the most was against Washington with 12 snaps. He had a 46 overall grade, which obviously is why he was weighted down so heavily because of that game. But kind of similar in terms of what we saw from Keyshawn Nixon, in that he's a special teamer, has a lot of experience on special teams. He started, which is, you know, a rare attribute, started for the Packers, had some good games, kind of came on strong at the, or not strong, but, you know, played down the stretch. He was in there week 17 and 18. Again, week 17 was his best, and he came in cold, hadn't played since week 10. But also the same kind of ability to play anywhere. Not only is he a special teamer, but he played in the boundary, Weeks 4 and 5, played as a safety. Weeks 6 and 7, played in the slot. Weeks 10 and 17. So, I mean, it's a benefit, but it's also a big negative, because when you're coming in to a team, you know, you look at Christian Watson for an example. Christian Watson's coming in and he's being asked to do basically one thing. And that one thing being a wide receiver is broken down into a million things, and it's really, really hard to learn. But imagine being Shamar, and one of the biggest things that they're telling you have to learn is special teams. Because, you know, if you want to make the team, that's where you're going to do it. So he's got to really grind on that special teams playbook and understand it and understand what his assignments are and understand all these things. And during practice, he's got to break off and do special teams and all this kind of stuff. But on top of that, he's got to learn to be a corner. Now, corner for him is broken into two parts, and I don't know if everybody is this way or not, but he has to learn to play as a boundary corner. He has to learn to play in the slot, and there's different technique and all that kind of stuff that he has to learn. But then on top of that, he has to learn to be a safety. The odds of a fifth-round pick coming in and really thriving in an environment like that, it's very unlikely. And so I'm not saying he can't be good. I'm just saying we need a lot more patience with guys like Shamar, because he's being given an impossible task. It's basically an impossible task to ask any rookie to come in and learn to do any one job. But to ask a fifth-round guy to come in and learn, you know, three different defensive positions and special teams, I mean, you're just fighting to keep your head above water. So, yeah, he had a bad game against Washington as a safety. Well, okay. Yeah, probably. But the point is he brings value in his versatility. And there was no reason to believe that he was really going to thrive. There's every reason to believe that he's going to get better. I don't know how much better. I don't know what his ceiling is. But the fact of the matter is he was very unlikely to reach his ceiling given what he was being asked to do. And what I usually always want is for the Packers to find a position for him. But the problem is his value is in his versatility. So they're probably not going to do that. They're going to continue to try to grow his understanding of all these things. And again, that just means it's going to take longer, because it's impossible to just understand how to be a strong safety, a corner, a slot, and then, you know, multiple positions on special teams and just crush it. So I'm willing to bet he's more or less a lock. I just don't know. I have no idea how good he's going to be to be able to come in. The one benefit, I guess, for a guy like Shamar is if he's elevated because of an injury, that's when you get locked into one role. And we're going to just forget about everything else, and it's going to be crunch time. And every single defensive coach, DB coach, cornerback coach, assistant to the regional cornerback coach, they're putting all their energy into bringing this guy up on that one thing. Forget safety. Forget everything. You learn to do this one job. And that's going to really be able to help him. But in the meantime, he's just going to be a floater, and it's going to be slow growing. And then the only other guy is really Keandre Thomas, as far as guys that have experience. Texada is obviously a rookie, but Keandre Thomas was a undrafted free agent last year for Cleveland. He played a handful of snaps on special teams, had a 52.1 overall grade, and that's about all we've got on him. So pretty unlikely to, I guess, make the team. I don't really know. But it kind of seems like a three-man race for a position that could potentially have all three of them stay on between, you know, I guess maybe that's not fair for Ento, but again, looking at Rico Gafford, he's got a great opportunity here. Shamar is probably the top guy that I would expect to make it. Just again, based on his versatility, based on the fact that he's one of the few that's drafted, based on the fact that he was drafted by the Packers, based on the fact that he's played for the Packers, special teams experience, versatile, all that stuff. Next, I would probably assume Keyshawn Nixon, because we obviously care a lot about special teams, and he was probably handpicked by our special teams coordinator. Again, versatility. Again, starting experience. Again, all that stuff. After that, though, it's, what, Ento and Gafford, with obviously Keandre Thomas trying to fight for a spot, as well as Raleigh Texada. But anyways, again, kind of a no-brainer that Gafford gets kicked over to corner. And it is going to be tough, because again, he's just a wide receiver. But hey, put those hands to good use. And I think the Packers are going to be willing to be patient with him. If he can just go out and show the athleticism, I think they'd be willing to bring him up. Anyways, we should probably take a break right here. Big giant thank you to Nathan Schmidt for jumping back in on Patreon. I really do appreciate that. I added him over to my Substack. I just talked to Sam Holman. He's going to be doing some writing for me over there. He's got an article all ready to go for, I believe, Tuesday, the day after the 4th of July. He's going to have that go live. I'm also working on one right now, trying to get that revved back up. So thank you for your support. Again, you can support me on Patreon at patreon.com/pack_daddy. If you want to subscribe to the Substack, it's packernet.substack.com. Going to be trying personally to take a lot of this statistical stuff, things that I talk about. Some of it tends to be a little bit more visual, and rather than having it in podcast format where it's like, you know, I heard him say this one thing about something the one time and I don't remember exactly what it was, being able to fully just lay out visually all the statistics in one place to kind of give you a fuller picture of it. And do some other stuff too, but that's kind of one of the main things I want to focus on. Anyways, we'll take a break and we'll be right back.
We all have smartphones, and we all know they're pretty amazing, but they also can be amazingly distracting, especially when we're around other people. So U.S. Cellular wants us to reset our relationship with our phones by putting down our phones for five. That's right, a company that sells phones wants us to put down our phones. And to see what we find, learn more at uscellular.com/builtforus. In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We get all hyped up thinking we're going to get some high-value Jordan Love card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view on all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now when I buy Slab Packs on Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. And honestly, the best thing for me and my son is the fact that we're kind of novices into this. When I walk into a card shop with my son, and a card says it costs $40, kind of just taking his word for it that that's a good value. So I appreciate the transparency on grading, as well as just getting excited about seeing what you could potentially get. Right now, you can get 10% off your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/packdaddy. Wow, that's crazy offer. 10% off a $400 slab pack. That's 40 bucks right there. Anyways, that's arenaclub.com/packdaddy for 10% off your first purchase.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So I wanted to start off after the break just kind of looking at something, again, kind of dead season stuff, but also something I generally, I mean, even during the regular season, kind of want to try to keep my eye on a little bit, because eventually the day will come. But there was an article by Pro Football Focus. This was quite a while ago, but I've been hanging on to it. But it's one draft prospect every team should be keeping an eye on. You scroll, 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 you get to the Green Bay Packers, and they have tight end Jaheim Bell out of South Carolina. It goes on to say the Packers have tried throwing a couple of third-rounders at the tight end position to get some production from the spot, but so far nothing has stuck. Bell can change that with his ability after the catch. The Packers' offense already does a good job of scheming touches for the position. Bell could maximize those. Last season, he averaged 11.8 yards after the catch per reception. That's pretty wild. And broke 13 tackles on 30 catches. Now, to be clear, it doesn't mention in the article, but if you look over at the consensus big board, Jaheim Bell is expected to be a mid-round pick as of right now. I believe they have him roughly around the fourth round. They have him as tight end 8. So this isn't, you know, PFF saying this is who they should take in the first round, because then we could easily probably dismiss it. But we kind of talked about it a little bit with corner in terms of, you know, maybe we need to invest a little bit in that. And so it kind of just got me thinking, beyond Jaheim Bell, beyond tight end, what are kind of the needs as we see them right now? And so I kind of wanted to give a cursory look going position by position to just look at how much of a need and, you know, are we talking early round? Are we talking mid round, late round? Is it an immediate need, a kind of getting to be an immediate need kind of thing? And so, I mean, if you just start at quarterback right off the bat, there's two ways to look at it. Number one, of course, it's not a need. We have Aaron Rodgers. Number two, heck yeah, it's a need because Rodgers isn't going to be here much longer. I mean, unless you want to be that team, and maybe you do, that says let him retire and then, you know, go out and get a guy like Carson Wentz and flounder for several years, or let Jordan Love play, or however you want to do that, and hopefully you can be bad enough to get a good quarterback, or maybe you'd find being, you know, what the Bengals were with Dalton for like 20 years. But generally, the way the Packers like to do it, the way that I prefer to do it, is to try to get a quarterback, you know, maybe a year or two early, if at all possible. I'm not saying reach, I'm just saying if they're available, do you pull the trigger? If there's a guy you really like, do you do it? I think the answer at this point is already yes. The obvious issue is we're assuming that we're going to be winning, you know, roughly 13-ish, at least 10-ish games. And so you're going to be drafting late, and so there's probably not a lot of good quarterbacks. So the question of when do you draft them in terms of round, there's no question. It's basically first round or bust. And I'm not saying you can't take a swing on some mid-round guys. We've done that in the past, primarily looking to round out sort of that, find that quarterback number two. But quarterback is one of the more difficult positions because the odds of finding one when you don't need one are very low. It's not impossible, but generally, if you're going to get a really good quarterback, you're going to get him in the first round and probably first half of the first round. You know, Pat Mahomes and Mac Jones and those kinds of guys, they were not the first quarterbacks taken. They were not, you know, super early top 10 guys. I don't think Mahomes is top 10. I don't remember. But it's still top half. And again, I would assume most fans don't want to go that route because let's load up on talent that we actually can. And I know I sound like I'm dismissing Jordan Love, and maybe to some extent I am. You know, I'll change that tune when he can prove to do something. But as it stands now, I think most fans would prefer to invest in Aaron Rodgers, invest in the team, and just let the thing completely die when he leaves. I hate that, but I understand it. But I think the Packers have already shown a willingness to do that, and I think it should be on our radar. We know that he may not be back next year. So, I mean, we might not even have a choice. If he decides in March or whenever that, you know, I think I'm done, I'm going to hang it up, guess what? It suddenly becomes priority number one. Unless, of course, we believe in Jordan Love. And I think the conversation then is going to be Packer fans and everybody in the media is going to say, we have to get a quarterback, let's look at quarterbacks. And we're going to be really mad for the same reason we get mad at wide receiver. The Packers are going to look at the situation and go, eh, we might be all right. They're going to say, we kind of like Jordan Love. Wide receiver is another kind of tough one to answer because we don't know what we have. I don't know, you know, Sammy probably won't be here next year. I don't know if Lazard will boom or bust. Randall, I don't know if he'll be here next year. Amari, it really depends if that, I mean, if he doesn't take us, I mean, let's look at worst case scenario. Sammy's gone, Randall's gone. Lazard was not any more than he has been. Watson and Dobbs and Torre did not necessarily blow up. Maybe there's some contribution here or there, but we haven't seen anything. Amari didn't get any better. Juwan and Malik might not even make it into this season. And so it's right back to the top of needs with the unfortunate aspect of we've already invested a ton into this. We invested Amari, Romeo, Watson, Touré with the expectation that some of these guys are going to take a second-year leap. And so now are we over-investing, but we can't do nothing, and it's just kind of a mess. And my expectation at that point would be probably looking in to invest, probably not super early, but maybe later round or mid-round. The only reason I say that is because I just don't think, with all the guys that we have, that we're going to look for more early investment. Because it'll just be another first-round pick that has to learn the offense along with a bunch of other guys that are still just learning the offense, and it just doesn't feel great. So I think there'll be a leaning on the guys that we have. Lazard remains sort of that number one target with a hope that Dobbs, Watson, etc. grow and take that job from him. And we got a pretty good group with you know, some, again, a mid-round or some mid-round guys kind of coming up behind them. They're going to slowly learn. And then the year after that, 2024, they kind of start to, you know, it kind of gets revved up from there. On the positive side, Alan Lazard blows up and we get contribution from some of these other guys. And maybe some other guys stick around, Randall, Sammy, I don't know. And it's just not really a need at all. And we take a swing only if the value is just really, really solid and we really like it. But I just have a hard time believing we're going to go early investment again unless it's just horrific and there's a guy that we really, really like that's still available, which it's always going to come down to value at any one of these positions, no matter how much we like or dislike the position. If there's somebody that they think is like a top 10 prospect that falls to them at 20, they're probably going to pull the trigger. Looking at tight end, which is what the article was about, it's another one that I'm kind of torn on. I know generally the consensus is that it's not a great group. Mercedes is probably not going to be around much longer. Tonyan is kind of teetering, but hasn't really proved to be a super big breakout guy. Plus, you add injuries and everything else into the mix, it would make sense to maybe go in a different direction. Josiah has not really broken out much. We got a lot of optimism about Tyler Davis out there, but that has not really materialized. Dominique Daphne is decent, but again, is not a star. But similar to, you know, some other positions in the past, I think the tight end position is another one that the Packers maybe realize they don't really have a star, or maybe they don't realize that. Maybe they think Tonyan and Davis can be, will be, whatever, are, I don't know. But I just think they like the group. That's not to say they wouldn't add anybody, but right now it's a crowded group, so we're going to have to clear the field before they would even consider bringing in someone, especially relatively early, that they're going to say, based on this investment, he has to play. Well, if Mercedes comes back another year, and Tonyan's not going anywhere, and Josiah's still on the team, and Tyler Davis is still there, and Dominique Daphne's still there, that's five guys. Even if we lose one, that's four guys. You invest a second-round pick, a third-round pick, or, you know, heaven forbid, a first-round pick, which I doubt they would ever do, they have to play. Well, are we going to have five, six tight ends? Who are we bumping off? Are we saying goodbye to Tonyan? Maybe Mercedes walks off. Are we moving on from Josiah? Daphne, who is, I was looking at it for one of the articles I'm writing, he was at the very least the best blocking tight end in the entire NFC North, ahead of Mercedes Lewis in terms of PFF grades. Dominique Daphne was the best blocking tight end. So that's kind of the complication. And I think they like these guys. And so there's sort of a general blanket view of tight end not good, need new tight end, go get tight end. But there's a bigger view of the Packers have different roles for different tight ends, and they look for specific attributes in these specific tight ends to fill these specific roles. And they like the guy, you know, Robert Tonyan is their, you know, sort of receiving guy. Mercedes Lewis is that blocking guy. Josiah DeGuara is sort of that H-back guy. Then you got Tyler Davis and Dominique Daphne that have sort of like backups to those roles, or possibly even primary. I don't know how that's all going to shake out, but if you're going to look at tight end, you have to look at what role are we trying to fill. You know, if Lewis leaves, does Dominique Daphne just slot into that, and we still have Josiah, Dominique, and Robert Tonyan? If Tonyan leaves, does Tyler Davis slide into that spot, and we've got, you know, Tyler Davis, Dominique Daphne, and Josiah DeGuara, who they like? Do they see a big enough need to where they want a mid-round rookie to come in and take the job away from a guy that they like? I just don't generally see it. And so again, you get that conflict of fans look at it and say, not good enough, need better, go draft. And the Packers look at it and go, this is our group. This is our core. This, it works. You know, when I need something done by a tight end, I need someone that can fill this role. And this guy fills that role. He understands the offense. He understands his assignment. He understands all these things. It's a big, giant investment. I don't know if you've ever had to work with somebody that's a new employee. It's nice getting fresh blood in there. But when they're first there, they're more of a drain than a benefit. Because not only do they not know what they're doing, but you have to stop what you're doing to show them how to do it, and you got to do it even slower than you would be doing it if you just did it by yourself. And so eventually they get up to speed, and eventually they end up being another hand that can help, but even that, who knows? The odds that you're going to get somebody in the fourth round that's going to replace Robert Tonyan and be better than Robert Tonyan, I would say are relatively low. So will they take swings at guys that they like that can fill in those roles and have a new toy to play with and learn and grow, and, you know, eventually these guys are going to move on, and you're going to need replacements, and this can be, sure. But I don't know that I see it as the way it's being portrayed, which is it just hasn't been good enough. It needs to be better. Go draft somebody. I think it's a little bit more complex, unfortunately, because you kind of wish it was that simple. We don't get production from our tight ends the way other people get production from our tight ends. We need a star. We need that Kelsey, you know, that Kittle. Go find him. Go get him. Go plug him in. And granted, again, if he's there, maybe they pull the trigger on him, but it's so hard to decipher. You know, those are all mid-round picks. Who knows who that guy is going to be? It's not as though, you know, you got to get a top 10 tight end to be able to get that production. Again, I think Kittle was a fifth-round pick. I mean, you just don't know. You kind of just bet on the traits with these guys and see what you can get out of them. And obviously, if you go first round, second round, you're talking about guys that have elite traits and you're hoping that it translates, but a lot of times it doesn't. And again, a lot of times the stars are these, you know, second, third, fourth, fifth round guys or undrafted free agents even in some cases that just kind of figure it out. So pretty complicated. At running back, it's also tough because, again, I don't know if Aaron Jones sticks around for a long time. And so the real question for me is, A.J. Dillon's the star. Do we have guys with Kylan Hill, Patrick Taylor, Tyler Goodson, B.J. Baylor? I don't want to just flat out say no because I like a lot of these guys, but I tend to think they're going to want to draft somebody. And that doesn't necessarily have to mean another second-round pick. It certainly doesn't mean a first-round pick. But third, fourth, fifth, like Aaron Jones was, I do think that's probably on the docket at some point, probably as early as next year, to try to kind of invest a little bit more in running back other than just let's keep swinging at undrafted free agents or in Kylan Hill's plays, in his case, a seventh-round pick. So I would expect a mid-round selection. I don't think second round. I just think we've done that already with A.J. Dillon. It's possible, but I think he's kind of the every down back star. And that's the other thing is I do think they're going to want an all-purpose back. And generally, if you're going to get those guys, it's going to be in the first probably four rounds. I know, again, Aaron Jones, fifth round pick, so who knows. But usually when you get into fourth-ish, fifth-ish, sixth-ish round, you're specializing. You've got the hammer, who's just kind of a big, heavy plotter. You've got the smaller, speedier receiving back. So early mid selection, third-ish, fourth-ish round, I would think that they're probably going to want to invest in a running back. Doesn't mean will, because that's not how you draft. You don't say we need this position by this round. But I'm just saying I think it's on their radar to keep their eyes open. And then for offensive line, again, the complication is I don't know what we have right now. The presumption is we have David Bakhtiari and Elgton Jenkins at tackle, so we're pretty well set there. We also have Yash, who we like. We've got guys like Zach Tom that have the potential to move out to tackle, maybe even Sean Ryan, I don't know, so maybe we're okay. On the flip side of that, though, maybe Sean Ryan, Zach Tom are strictly interior guys. Maybe David Bakhtiari is not long for this league. And so we've got Elgton Jenkins that presumably is going to be very good in that position. We haven't seen a ton of him at that position, although when we have, he was extremely good at it. But we have one injured tackle. So I don't know. If you're telling me David Bakhtiari is healthy and he's planning on being in the league for a while, then we're good. You know, keep taking those mid-round, late-round swings like we have been and hope to find those diamonds in the rough. Interior, I just think at this point we're more or less set. The only thing that, and by set I don't mean we're loaded with elite talent. I just mean we have Royce, who they're investing in, that they like. They have John Runyon, who they really like. We've got Zach Tom and Sean Ryan that we are working with. By the way, Rashid Walker is also a tackle that's going to be kind of being worked on, and we'll see how that goes. But the only thing that would cause me to be slightly concerned would be if Josh Myers has another kind of subpar season. I don't think they're going to look to necessarily replace him. He's a second-round pick. I think they're going to be more patient, but would they possibly begin to look at some interior guys with center experience to possibly take that job if Josh does not seem to be getting better in year three? I think that is possible. But again, the guard spot may be a problem. It may not have any talent, but the fact that we've got Royce, we've got Zach Tom, we've got Sean Ryan, we've got John Runyon, I just think we're going to kind of sit with that. And that doesn't mean we don't continue to take swings, but I don't see any reason why there would be any early investment on the interior for a little while, at least until we get this kind of sorted out. Now, there's always the possibility that you go get a guard who can play tackle, like Elgton Jenkins, or a center, I guess, in his case, that can play guard, that can play tackle. But that's just kind of, first of all, I would need to know where we're at with Elgton Jenkins and David Bakhtiari, and also just how this thing is shaking out. I mean, if Josh Myers takes a step, then I think we're just good across the board, unless David Bakhtiari has some more serious long-term issues. And you know, you still want to look to replace a guy like David Bakhtiari at some point, but you're not taking a first-round swing on a guy that's going to sit on the bench, you know what I mean? That's where you continue with these mid-round swings, and you continue to develop guys like that, like Yash, guys like Rashid Walker, and hope that they can maybe just slot into that spot until we get a little bit closer to the point that we maybe just need to pull the trigger on an early-round guy that we think can really play. On the defensive side of the ball, looking at the defensive line, we love the defensive line as it is, but I don't know that it's not still kind of a big need. And need is kind of a iffy term, but I guess just in terms of, do you think they would still draft a defensive tackle? Yes. Do you think it's possible they would still draft an early, possibly first-round defensive tackle? I think the answer is yes. I don't know how much longer Dean has. Jerron Reed is a short-term Band-Aid. T.J. Slayton is a fifth-round pick that has yet to really prove anything. Jack Heflin, Jonathan Ford, all these different guys. It's really just Kenny Clark, who's, you know, he's still got several years left in him, but Kenny Clark and Devontae Wyatt. And we don't know what Devontae Wyatt brings to the table yet. And so, you know, it may be overkill to get another first-round pick and then just being loaded with, you know, a Devontae Wyatt, Kenny Clark, and a Devontae Wyatt 2.0 on the other side of Kenny Clark. I wouldn't be opposed to that. And the point is, I don't know if the Packers would either. And again, it just kind of comes down to it's maybe not our biggest need, but I'm sure as heck I'm not going to let another Devontae Wyatt just walk past me and not select him because we already got a guy. So again, there's questions. What does Jerron do? How long is he going to be here? How much longer is Dean going to be here? What is Kenny's future outlook? How well is Devontae Wyatt coming along? How well is TJ Slayton coming along? So either way, I see investment in defensive tackle no matter what. I mean, that's a position where I never think you're going to be just so set. It's like we just don't need any more because there's so many guys that you can rotate in and out. But as of right now, long term, we have Kenny, we have Wyatt, we have Slayton. I don't really know about anybody else that I'm confident will be here in 2 to 3 years. And again, of those guys, we know what Kenny is. We don't know Devontae Wyatt or TJ Slayton. So when you look at it from that perspective, again, first round, second round, third round through seventh round, I wouldn't be super shocked. First round is a little iffy, but I also know the Packers love defensive tackle, defensive line. And again, if a guy's just sitting there, I wouldn't be super shocked. But at the very least, second round and beyond, definitely. And again, I'm not saying that because we have a bad defensive line. I'm just saying that looking at 2023 and beyond, I don't know what the defensive line really is, especially in terms of depth, but also talent. Because, again, we might just still be sitting at Kenny Clark and nobody else. We don't know. Pass rusher is probably near the top, if not the top. Again, not because it's necessarily bad, but we have Rashawn and what? I don't know what Preston is. I don't know how much longer Preston will be here. I don't know what Kingsley is. Well, I'm sure he'll be here for a while, but I don't know what he brings to the table. And then we're with Randy Ramsey, Jonathan Garvin, et cetera, et cetera. So if there's one position you look at and say, okay, we're talking first round, which obviously if the Packers had to pick one position of value where it's like first round or bust, you got quarterback, you got edge rusher, you got tackle. I mean, it's one of the premier positions that you really, if you need a big swing, you got to do first round. It's not that you can't find guys in the second round or later, but this is where you find them. So that's going to be the big one that's circled on my list early and often for edge rusher, because we just got to kind of build it out, not only getting another guy opposite Rashawn Gary, but just kind of getting better. I mean, Kingsley is a great pick because although he's maybe not going to be a Rashawn Gary, it's nice to have somebody that you can potentially rely on to just take some snaps and show a little bit of production. I don't know that he'll be that, but I mean, who else do we have? Seventh round pick, Jonathan Garvin, undrafted free agent, Randy Ramsey, you know, Ladarius Hamilton, Chauncey Manick, Tipagalea, Kobe Jones. I mean, just a lot of guys that you don't know that weren't drafted. And again, at a position like this, you need some investment, and we just don't have a ton. So that is probably a number one on the list. Linebacker is the only one where I'm saying late, mid to late, and that's probably it. I don't necessarily know how long Devondre is going to be here, but even so, unless Quay is kind of a bust, I just think this is not really an issue. I can't imagine, and again, anything's possible, but I can't imagine an investment earlier than the fifth round, just for the sake of depth and you know, development and that kind of stuff. And again, if there's a star, sure. Third round, they really like the guy, why not? But I just don't see it. Cornerback is another one that is largely about depth, but there is still kind of a question here. We know Jair is locked up for the long term. We are quite confident Stokes is going to be a long-term investment. You never know. He could take a turn for the worse, but that's kind of the core. Rasul, I don't know how long he's going to be here. And so it's kind of similar to defensive tackle, where I like the group we have now, but is it impossible they go early, possibly even first round? I don't think so. It's probably more second round or later, but I don't think it's impossible at all, especially if we're talking about a star player that has slot experience. Possibly even look at one of those safety slash slot type of guys that are becoming so popular, because safety is also a need, which we'll get there. But if you can find a guy that kind of fills that role in the first round, because again, we might as well go over to safety now. Amos is probably not going to be here much longer, unfortunately, and I hope I'm wrong about that. Darnell Savage has kind of regressed to the point of it being a concern, and there's basically no depth behind them. So I think safety is maybe the next biggest need outside of outside linebacker. You could maybe even argue it's a bigger need, because I don't know if we have any safeties that are going to be any good once Amos leaves, if Darnell does not improve this year. And at least with pass rusher, we have Rashawn. Hopefully still have Preston next year. I don't know. We have Kingsley potentially doing something. We have nothing at safety. So you could clearly make an argument that safety will, without Amos there, be a much bigger need. But again, would you potentially invest a corner first round? I don't think it's impossible. We know the Packers like doing it. We know they think it's incredibly important. We know the statistics, and the Packers agree with this, point to corner and shutting down the passing game as being a number one priority. You take away the big plays, you take away their ability to go through the air, and you basically shut down an entire offense. And so whether that be a regular corner that can potentially play in the slot, because I'm assuming that's what we're going to want, or a safety that can play in the slot, or whatever the case may be, I don't think it's impossible that that ends up being a first-round pick. Now, would they get a true boundary corner? In other words, he has no ability to play in the slot in the first round. I struggle with that a little bit. I know everybody will say, well, just put Jair in the slot and we're good, but now you're pigeonholed into a position where you have a rookie that maybe isn't super great at football, and the question is, do we put him on the bench because he's just not ready and we're not going to put him on the field as one of our premier boundary guys while we kick Jair in the slot? Do you do that? Do you just put him on the field and let him struggle out there while Jair, who could clearly cover that guy, is just goofing around in the middle of the field? It kind of puts you in a tough spot. So I that one I would struggle with a little bit. But I also struggle with the idea of taking a slot guy in the first round, because usually those guys kind of second round or later type prospects. So I don't know, but that is one to definitely put a big circle around, is if you find those, whatever you want to call it, star position or whatever, the safety slash linebacker slash, you know, slot guy, just sort of those versatile Swiss Army knife type players. I do think that would make a lot of sense, because it can cover a lot of ground depending on what needs you have. But even still, from a depth standpoint, you know, maybe we keep Rasul around for a while. Maybe we don't, and we have a guy that we kind of like, you know, in Keyshawn Nixon or whatever, that can play in the slot. Or we just get a guy in free agency, whatever. I'm sure there's somebody out there that can play in the slot. Even still, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh round, just continuing to take swings. Because again, like a lot of these other positions, these aren't a bunch of third, fourth, fifth round developmental guys that are sitting here in as corners. We have a bunch of undrafted free agents, you know, and one fifth round pick in Shamar Jean Charles. And I've basically already covered safety, but you know, I like Amos and Savage. I still think Savage is very redeemable. It was his first year in this new system, which is going to be much more complicated. He's going into his second year again. He had kind of a second year leap with Pettine, and then he kind of regressed in his first year with Barry, and now he's going into his second year with Barry. So I'm kind of hoping for a leap from him there, and maybe the addition of Quay Walker kind of changes things enough to take a little bit off of Darnell's plate. But again, going into 2023, is Amos there? How well is Savage playing? And is there anything from any of these guys, whether it be Innis Gaines, Vernon Scott, Sean Davis, Tariq Carpenter, Trey Sterling, are we getting anything from these guys? I don't know, but I do think early investment is not impossible. Even if Amos is still there in 2023, is it possible they get a first-round safety? Yes. But anyways, I'm going to leave it at that. You folks have yourselves a fantastic Sunday. I will talk to you tomorrow. Hope you have a great holiday weekend. Have a good one. Bye-bye.